Well, let me start just by asking how it's going. Any questions coming up? Anything you'd like to say about the previous week? We had quite a bit of activity on the website, which always makes me happy. So, but who would anybody want to say anything? No. The answer is no. Nobody wants.
A lot of questions.
Yeah. Well, you're welcome to ask. Hi, who just joined us?
Hi, Jake. This is Yolaine. I'm back again.
Oh, nice to hear from you, Yolaine.
Yeah, good to hear you.
So, so Arthur was just going to ask us one of his many questions. Is that right?
Pardon me?
That was Arthur is going to ask us a question. Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in the text I read, for example, page 32, appearance manifests space. What appears in space is space in operation.
Yes.
And is this, my question is this more a description of my inner work? Where is the appearance, outside or in me?
Ah, okay. Well, I think the answer is both. You know, so,
yeah.
One of the characteristics of appearance, the way we ordinarily experience it, is that there is an external world and an internal world.
Yeah.
But if you are only looking from the perspective of appearance itself, those are just two different forms of appearance.
I missed the last line. Then there what?
I said then those are only two different forms of appearance. Some things appear as my, you know, as my inner experience, and some things appear as the external world. And it's not as though we want to throw that distinction away. It's obviously an important, helpful distinction. But from the point of view of appearance, it's just two different ways of things appearing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's enough. Hi, who's that?
Yeah, this is Yolaine again.
Yeah.
I'm fiddling with my phone, so.
Okay, you cut yourself off.
Disconnected, I'm sorry.
Okay, no problem. Okay, so Arthur, you were going to ask?
Yeah, in your guidance, it is a sentence close to my question, just, it is possible to have different kinds of space. Different kinds of space.
That's true.
Yes, yeah. So, I always was busy with the question, space more, I create the space inside. Can space appear outside and grow? And so, I come always to the point, space is something what happens inside, in me.
Okay, well,
yeah.
I don't think I'd say it exactly. I'm not sure I do, so let me comment and then we can see. I don't think it helps so much to think in terms of inside and outside, if we're trying to go to a deeper level or deeper understanding of space. Really, I think what becomes very clear in the reading we've been doing and hopefully the exercises in practice, is that in our ordinary understanding, what's the most obvious thing to say about space, because we're talking about physical space, is that there are objects and distances and here and there, and the whole thing has a very solid structure to it. But if we go to the level of space that we are trying to investigate, then all of that gets turned upside down or inside out. And you say, really, whatever appears in space has no structure to it at all. It's just appearance. And the structure of whatever it is that appears is just part of the appearance. So you know, at one place, I can't remember if we've discussed it in our reading so far, but at one place, Rinpoche talks about flattening space, and he says the solidity that we give to things, and the kind of space that supports that solidity has all this structure, all of these dimensions, but we're actually better off, we come closer to the real understanding of space if we just flatten that or pop it like a balloon. Maybe that's a good image. And so then if you say, well, I create space or it's my inner experience of space, there's some truth in that because part of what appears and therefore part of what is constituted by space is our inner experience. But that whole way of saying it, inner experience versus outer reality, it doesn't fit very well with this deeper understanding of space. So
yeah.
Let's leave it at that. Certainly you can ask more or comment more online, but I think in terms of this phone call, that's probably as much time as we should give. Anybody else? Maybe we'll take another question before we start talking about this week. Anybody else have a question? Hello. My question is, who's that? Ooh, it's a noisy. Hello, who's that? Yes? Yeah, I can't hear you at all. Why don't you try dialing back in? Something is wrong with the connection right now. Try it again.
But I don't know. Okay, but which number should I dial? The one where they
You know, we
but
can't
they asked me for a password and a country password.
I can't even hear. Who is this?
It's Eloise.
Oh, Eloisa, good.
Yeah,
okay.
And I'm going to mute her and see if that works.
Okay.
Okay, I'm going to try to mute you and see if that works. Okay.
Hello?
Hello.
Yeah, everybody's here, but Eloisa, are you still there?
She would be muted now. Hold
oh,
on.
I see, I see,
let me
I
look
see.
And see.
Okay, sorry for the technical difficulties.
She's muted, and I believe she's still here.
Okay, in other words, she can hear us, but we can't hear her, is that right?
Correct.
I see. Okay, well, that's half an answer. Okay.
Yeah, it helps with the static. That's
yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, let's just start in with this week. I want to start with the very beginning of the reading, the first sentence of chapter 5, or the first paragraph, which is two sentences. And Rinpoche writes here that we are in trouble. As far as understanding space, we're going to be in trouble if we rely on reason and on logic, because that reduces space. And I think it's a very interesting statement, because on the surface it doesn't really make any sense. I mean, why would reason and logic have anything to do with space? But in the context, I think it's pretty clear what Rinpoche has in mind, because of what he says in the next sentence is, the problem arises when we try to be certain about things, when we try to know things for certain. I actually looked up, just before the call, I looked up the word certain, the origin of the word certain. And it's quite interesting. In Latin, the word certain comes from when you put something through a sieve. You know, like when you're cooking and you pour it through I don't know the word in German, but you pour it through a sieve to take out the big things. Yeah, genau, indeed. So that's what the word certain comes from. It comes from pouring something through a sieve, and so the idea is you're making a distinction. When you say something is certain, you are specifying it. And that is exactly what, really, I think what he's talking about, and what we do when we try to make something certain. What we do is we leave out everything that is not the thing that we want to define. And when we do that, we are we're creating substance. And that's such a characteristic move in time, space, and knowledge. It's something I already mentioned a few minutes ago. The idea that what we think of as being the most real and the most definite is the things that are solid, like rocks and trees and all of the physical things in the world. And what...
Can I add something?
Yes, yes, you can, of course.
So could we say then that in a certain way, or well, not, but that we are substancing or solidifying space in something?
Yes, I think we can definitely say that. Space in itself, that's why it's so interesting, the passage that Arthur mentioned from the last chapter where he says, let me find it again, he says, appearance manifests space, right? And the point really is that as long as you can stay at the level of appearance, then you're being true to space. But the moment that you try to turn appearance into something solid, then by doing that, you're turning away from space, and you're really, and this again is a way Rinpoche says it, you're making space disappear.
Yes, I get that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. So the problem or the question that comes up that Rinpoche then looks at in the beginning of this chapter is, if you can't rely on reason, or if relying on reason has this characteristic that it makes us lose contact with space or makes space disappear, then what can you do? How can you really, what's the knowledge that is true to space? And of course, that topic comes up a lot when we talk about knowledge, but it already gets introduced here. And Rinpoche really addresses that just by giving one example, which is still on that first page. And he says, the mind does allow for other ways of knowing. Now, to be precise and kind of stay with the language carefully, because the language in these books is very careful. It's always very careful. So what he says is, the mind as presently constituted allows for other ways of knowing. And what that suggests is that if the mind were differently constituted, the possible ranges of knowing would expand, or might expand dramatically. But he's saying that even with our ordinary mind, just our regular walking around in the world mind, we do have other possibilities of knowing. And the example that he gives is knowing what it means when someone is happy. So I'm not quite sure what it means there, but I think what this example suggests is, if you see someone, sometimes you can say, oh, you look very happy, right? And one way of understanding that is to say, well, we can kind of tell from the wrinkles on their face, you know, the wrinkles are laugh lines instead of frown lines, or there's a certain light in their eyes. And that's probably part of it. But I think what Rinpoche is suggesting is that there's just a quality about the person where we know that they're happy. Or, of course, you know, we know that they're sad or something like that. And that is not it's not a knowing that you arrive at through reasoning about something or through logic. And in that sense, you could say it's not certain. But you can be very confident in your knowledge. As he says, there's no language to communicate it. There's no logic to define it. But we can sense it and we can experience it. And so that's just the example that he gives for a way of knowing that is more true to space. And when he starts to say, okay, so what can you do to, how can we activate that kind of knowing? really what he's talking about, or what he starts to talk about, is possibility. Right? We have to allow for other possibilities, and that's right down at the bottom of that first page also. He says, the starting point for such other ways of knowing is appreciation for possibility. And that's what we've been working with for quite some time now. When you talk about expansion, which is one of the things we've been focusing on, what you're doing is looking at different possibilities. By expanding your experience, you're allowing in other possibilities. And just the very idea of something being possible expands your horizon, you could say.
You know, what strikes me right now that you are reading and talking about it,
mm-hmm.
The first paragraph says we want to know, we seek to know things for certain.
Yes.
And then here Rinpoche says appreciation for possibility, which seems to me opening up something.
Yes, that's exactly right. The whole idea is that we think that our job is to get certain, you know, is to be clear, to be definite about things. And by definition, that leaves out possibilities. Right?
Yep.
Or we're trying to move away from possibility into certainty. And Rinpoche is really saying, if you want to take full advantage of what space offers, you have to do that in reverse. You have to move from certainty to possibility. And that means, of course, experiencing in a very different way, because you are, something, to say that something is possible means that it might also be not possible. I don't want to say impossible, but I guess I could. And that sounds wrong to us. It's like, you know, we want to be sure. We want to be certain. So Rinpoche is saying, well, you can live in the realm of what's possible and at the same time have knowledge. And that's the example he gave about knowing that someone is happy, which is just a small example, but it's meant to indicate something, I think, of what's possible. And he says, nothing needs to be established. I'm looking at the top of page 36. And he says, no one takes possession, nothing is established, nothing is pointed out, nothing is made concrete. And that's where TSK really encourages us to live, in this realm of the not established, the not definite, the not pointed out. And he has so many ways of talking about that in different places in the books. But I think the basic flavor there is clear enough. We want to be open and loose. And I take those words from the exercise that was assigned for last week, exercise 9, generating space, on page 279. He says, just become familiar with the elements of space. And then he says, later you can explore ways to open and loosen the categories you focus on so that they no longer function as firm distinctions. And again, that's exactly where we want to be going. We want to kind of leave things open, which makes sense. If you're talking about space and you say, let's leave things open, you clearly are coming closer to space. But the openness that he's pointing to is an openness that goes way beyond what we usually think of. So, I'm just going to go on with that a little bit. On page 36, the next page, Rinpoche writes, space does not, he says, space neither embraces nor allows the body of what appears. And that's putting together the two themes that we've been talking about so far, it seems to me. On the one hand, what space allows is possibility, and also what space allows is appearance. And what space doesn't allow, which doesn't mean that it prevents it, it just means it's not what space is about, what space doesn't allow is what's definite and certain and concrete. All of that, which we think of as being the most real, is actually what we add to appearance. And we add it in such a way that we actually are shrinking down experience. So the word add is not quite the right word. but it's kind of like, well, you know, it, sometimes when I'm talking, I doodle. Do you know that? What is that a word in German?
Mm-mm.
No. When you make little marks on the paper, you know, little drawings, little lines and things.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes when I'm drawing, I doodle, and I usually start off with some kind of big structure. And then I start adding lines, you know, and the more lines I add, after a while, I don't have many choices. I mean, I'm trying to make something that looks nice, you know, and the more lines I've made, the uglier it gets, really. And that's kind of what the adding in that we do to the openness of space. We add and we build structures and we make ourselves smaller and smaller and smaller. It's that kind of adding. There's a nice expression in English about painting yourself into a corner, you know, where you start painting a room, and if you're not careful, you end up having painted yourself into the corner of the room and you have no way to get out. And that's the kind of adding that we do. We paint structure onto the openness of space, and eventually we paint ourselves into a corner. Something like that. So, I said before, it's a very remarkable turning things on their heads. The identities that we give are not real, are not solid.
But Jack, as you describe it this way, it sounds as though, I know this is not what it is, but as you describe it this way, it sounds as though we're outside of space partitioning it. But how does this work if we are also an expression of space itself? So,
right.
It gets, in terms of we doing it, we concretizing and structuring, and we making concrete, we making solid.
Mm-hmm.
If there is no we other than space itself, then it gets a little convoluted for me.
Well, yeah, I think that's a really great point. And the answer to that has to do with what's very fundamental about TSK, which is to say that we do it, but because we ourselves are just something that space is presenting, you know, if you think of it as a story, which for me is a helpful way, and when we talk about time in the next unit, we'll go more in that direction. But if you say, okay, we're always telling this story, and in the center of this story is me, is the self. And then you say, you know, so we are the ones that are doing all of this. That we is also just an appearance. And it's really the move which says, I'm the one who's establishing what's certain. That's what turns our attention away from the quality of appearance or the quality of space and openness. So, in one sense, and this is when I said before, this is very fundamental in TSK, this is the element I meant. In one sense, none of this ever happens. It all stays appearance. And it's always available. So you don't have to go anywhere or do anything else. You don't have to go off in search of space because everything has become very solid and there is no space left anymore. No, it's just space. It's just stayed space. And our claim of establishing everything as certain is also just a kind of an appearance. But you're right that you know, it's very easy to fall into a way of talking where you say we do this or we do that, and that way of talking makes space something very distant. It's like we somehow have to work really hard to get back to space, and that's not true to what we're talking about. Space is really available in a very light and immediate way. So, yeah, thanks for pointing that out and clarifying it. So what I wanted to point out and clarify, I hope, is that, you know, this is not just a theoretical insight. And, of course, we know that from what we've been looking at in terms of space. it's not, we're not supposed to say, oh, how interesting and clever and brilliant or insightful, whatever, you know, what a great way of thinking about reality. No, the point is that we want to experience reality in this more open, appreciative, appearance-centered way without trying to turn everything into substance, without trying to be certain. You know, you could say that the characteristic move that we make as human beings, and again, you have to remember what we just said, that we are not separate and outside of this whole structure, but the characteristic move that we feel we have to make is to make things certain, because then we feel safe and secure and all of that, because we think that's the only choice we have. The question is, how can we operate in the world from moment to moment and day to day in a way that is not tied to that concretizing approach to reality? What I want to do really is suggest a couple of practices that grow out of the reading that we can look at for that. And I was going to talk a little about this concept of ekgnosis that Rinpoche introduces, but I think I'll leave that. I'll just write something about that, because I don't think we have time for that. But so what I want to do is suggest a couple of practices. So the first one, I think, is on page 38. So these are not formal practices of the kind that we did last week, and which, of course, you can keep working with. They just grow out of the way that Rinpoche points or describes these things. So what he says on page 38, well, actually, there's a couple of different things we could talk about. There's so many things, actually. So on page 38, he talks about the consequence of insisting on substance is that everything is frustrating, right? Everything is frustrating, and he talks about the friction of experience. This is toward the bottom of the page. He says, the consequences of our choice, in other words, the choice to create things that are solid and have substance, the consequences of our choice are evident everywhere. We experience them daily in the friction and frustration generated when objects and other established entities interact. So one practice would be to be aware when you're experiencing friction and frustration. And I think that everybody has plenty of opportunity to do that. You know, there are all sorts of things that come up during the course of the day. Mostly, if we're lucky, they're very small, but they're still very real, where there's a kind of a friction or a frustration. You know, we're looking for our glasses or something like that. And the question is, the practice would be to be aware of that friction or frustration and try to trace it back. Try to see, how does it connect to my commitment, my conviction that things are solid? Let's just leave it like that. So that, yes.
Hi, David here. Sorry.
Yeah.
Something happened to the phone just now, so maybe you don't have time to repeat that. Could you possibly say what you said and put that online as well?
Well, I can certainly put it online, but let me try to repeat it.
Okay.
I'm not sure exactly what part you didn't hear, but what I was suggesting was that when you're experiencing friction and frustration, these terms that Rinpoche uses here, and that might be in very, very simple ways, like you've lost something or you're stuck in traffic or any of those kinds of things, just the daily frustrations that we encounter. See if you can trace the link between that kind of emotional reaction and your insistence on things being solid. and concrete. That's all. That's the base. That's that practice. Yeah.
That frustration is a consequence of perceiving solidity?
Yes, exactly. To look for it that way. Now that's a claim, you know, but the question is, can you see that in your experience? Or when you try to look for that connection in your experience, what do you see? A second thing that I want to suggest, let's see if I can find it here. It is when he's talking about agnosis, and I will say more about that. But, I'll put something online about that. But at a certain point, and I'm not finding it right now, but he talks about clarity. He says, I'm just not finding it, so I'll have to give you my paraphrase. If we can maintain a clear awareness of the way we structure our experience, then we can begin to see it differently. It's that clear awareness that I wanted to suggest as a practice, really. And it would be very nice if I could find the exact language, but I've lost it. Let me just look for a moment. Excuse the silence. Oh, here it is. Okay, at the top of page 39. So he's talking about the possibility that space could project into mind. And I'll say something about that online. I won't try to deal with that right now. And he says, but if we want that to happen, basically you could just think if we want to be more open to space, mind must project a knowing capacity out into space. And then he says, if we cultivate a clear awareness, this outward projection of knowledge can remain available inwardly. So what I want to suggest is, maintaining that quality of clear awareness is pretty much related to what I just suggested, which was being aware of how the frustration links to our insistence on substance. A clear awareness practice, which is a very fundamental practice, would be to watch the tendency of the mind to go in the direction of substance. That's all. That may not be so easy to do, as we're talking about it, because it's pretty vague. But see, give it a look, see what you think. And one way to do that is, you could think of this as a variation on that practice, is something he talks about right toward the end of the chapter. He says, in each moment, we can know with the records of the past and the possibilities of the future. So one way to practice being clear, or to know with a clear awareness, is something that we've talked about before in terms of expansion, of expanding. We've said, well, you could expand in terms of time as well as space. And here he's saying, when you see the mind in operation, when you see our patterns of knowing in operation, be aware of the records of the past. Be aware of how what we're doing is expressing past structures, past-centered structures that we rely on. And be aware of how we're acting into the future, the possibilities of the future, how that also conditions what we're doing.
So when he says that sentence, he's talking about the personal past and the personal anticipated future?
You know, I think it can be both. But probably, in other words, the other alternative would be the kind of collective past and the collective future. But mostly we are involved with our own personal story, so I think that is the place to start for most people most of the time. So yes, just to be aware, like right now, if you wanted to practice clear awareness in this very moment, part of what you could do is be carrying an awareness of what's happened in this phone call until now. And, of course, it doesn't mean that you have to kind of go back and think through every moment, you know, how did it start and when did you dial up and what. But just the sense, the total sense of here we are at the end of this phone call and what's gone on until now. And then in the same way, a kind of a sense of the possibilities that come out. You have the rest of your day before you, or those of you in Europe have the rest of your evening before you. And that creates a quality of possibility. So the clear awareness is kind of tuning in to appearance in a way that leaves it open and leaves it possible. So you know, keep working if you want to with that assigned exercise from last week. But as you read through this chapter, when you get to the part about clear awareness, just reflect on that a little and see, well, how can I put that into practice? And then we also talked about frustration and friction and trying to trace how that is linked to the insistence on substance. Okay, I think that beep means we're at the end of our conversation. So anything else before we close? No.
No, I'm fine. Thank you.
Everybody's happy?
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.